Hey, this is Melissa Bartel. This is the Bathtub Mermaid, and this is my episode number 11 for the Dog Days of Podcasting 2014. I am still 2 days behind, and I've decided I'm okay with that. I need something to hold. I feel deluded, as once again I am eluded, and everything is left unconcluded. I need something to hold. And we know you're there, somewhere in these murky waters. If you just showed a swear, you bring to life all that you taught us. So when I sat down tonight, I thought, you know, everybody posted everything they could possibly post yesterday about Robin Williams. And I didn't know the man, although I often walked the same streets he walked because I grew up in the Bay Area, partly in the Bay Area. I grew up everywhere. I was born in New Jersey. I lived in Colorado for a while. I lived in California for the bulk of my teen years. And then I moved to South Dakota when I got married. And then I moved back to California, and now I live in Texas. And within those states, I have been back and forth to New Jersey many, many times. I've got family all over the country and out of the country because my parents retired to Mexico when I was 30. And I always tell people that I'm rootless because I don't really have a hometown. I mean, I have the place I was born, but nobody who's really close to me lives there anymore, so it's not like I can go back to it. But San Francisco is my spiritual hometown because it's where I had a lot of the most important experiences of my formative life. It's where I spent my 13th birthday. It's where I went to college while I was in college. It's where my husband and I first had our first offline date because we met on a mush way back before the web had pictures. So I've walked in the places where he walked. And because I also have my own history with comedy, with actually attempting stand-up a couple of times, with being in an improv troupe for several years, I know that comedy does come from pain. But I didn't really want to talk about that. I think that there are enough people who have said enough things that I've already been thinking. Instead, when I went looking for solace, I found this wonderful post by Anne Lamott, if you're going to be all formal about it. But again, I grew up in a community where she was present. And while I didn't know her personally, everyone always introduced her as Annie Lamott. My first introduction to her was on KQED Radio's West Coast Weekend in the 80s. When we lived in the Bay Area, and people would drive to Fort Mason to see a radio show. And she was the novelist in residence, and she would always have these really quirky commentaries on whatever was going on politically or personally. And it was before Bird by Bird became famous, and I always really liked her sort of worldview. I still like her worldview. I think the book that she came out with a couple years ago, Help, Thanks, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers, is really universal. And even though I'm not particularly religious, I'm very spiritual. I just have issues with organized religion, like crazy. So it's hard for me to be in any church for any long sense of, amount of time because I feel constrained and like I don't belong. And there isn't really any one church that has ever fit me to a point where I feel comfortable staying there for more than a few weeks or a few months or even a year. So there are two that I bounce between. But so Annie Lamott posted this really, really beautiful thing where, because she knew him, she grew up in the same town as Robin Williams. She knew him personally. She knew him before he was the person he was. And she said the same thing about him that she said when other people, celebrities and not, have died. That when you have a time of jarring grief, you look to the helpers and you see what the helpers in your society are doing, and those are the people you should follow, the people who help. I thought that was really beautiful and worth remembering. But the other thing that she said several months ago, I don't remember what it was about, but she was talking about this whole thing, and it's less popular as a hashtag now, but we still use it, which is first world problems. And what she said was, she really hopes she never sees anyone say, oh, I had this horrible thing happen to me today, but it was only horrible for me, you know, first world problems. Like, oh dear, Starbucks was out of the kind of drink I wanted, so I had to get something else. First world problems. And this is what she said very succinctly, your stuff is your stuff. It doesn't matter if you didn't know someone personally. If their death affects you, it affects you. It's your stuff. It doesn't matter if you're living a life where having a missed drink at Starbucks is the worst thing that's happened to you. You still get to have the feeling of, God, this sucks. You don't get to dwell on it. You certainly don't get to make a thing about it. And it's a really bad example because it's just so minor. But your stuff is your stuff. Your feelings are valid for you. And just because someone else may be having a worse time than you doesn't mean that what you feel isn't valid for you. And I thought that her sentiment about that was really empowering. It's not saying, hey, you get the ability to whine and you should enjoy it and you should revel in whining, because obviously that's pretty annoying and counterproductive. But I really liked her concept that you get to own your feelings and you get to have your feelings. And it doesn't matter if your feelings seem petty to someone else, as long as they matter to you and you work through them. But, of course, she's always quick to remind us that as human beings and as members of any society, we also have a moral obligation to help those who need it. And I think that's really important. I come from a combination of three faith traditions. Even though I don't go to church regularly because of my issues with organized religion, I still learn from all of them. My family, first and foremost, my Italian-American immigrant family in New Jersey is Roman Catholic. So I didn't learn until very recently that there's this term called cultural Catholic, where even though I'm not Catholic by religion, I'm Catholic by culture. So, I mean, I understand all of the gestures and the calling on the saints and the melodrama that comes with being part of a Mediterranean culture and me having that Catholicism so deeply rooted that, I mean, I actually did have relatives who had the picture of JFK right next to the picture of the Pope on top of their console televisions when I was little. And while it's a stereotype now, I think part of me kind of misses that because it was so innocent. Their faith in these people was so innocent. And I think we're much more jaded now that we have access to so much media. It's like, sometimes I think Facebook even is just a bad thing for families because it's great that we can find out that Johnny took his first step or Jill passed her first algebra test and is thinking about being a rocket scientist when she grows up. But I also think that it was easier to live in the world when you didn't know the deepest political convictions of every single person you have to interact with in your life. Because when you know things about them, you judge. Even if you don't mean to judge, and even if you're not actively judging, we all do it. We make those split decisions. And I think it's bad. It's dangerous. And I think we forget that beyond the politics and the religion and everything, we're all just basically human. I firmly believe that there is more among all of us that unites us than divides us. And I completely lost my train of thought. I'm a little sniffling today because we've been cleaning like crazy and it raises dust. And we took my Chihuahua, as I said a couple of days ago, to be groomed last week, and he still smells like their shampoo. And he sleeps in the bed with us. He's the only dog I have who still sleeps in the bed with us. All the others are too big or too young. So he has this thing where he sleeps like literally under our pillows half the time, which is, let me tell you, just great for your neck. It's driving me crazy. My allergies have not stopped since he came home, and I'm really tempted to just stick him in the sink and give him another bath, but I'm pretty sure he would never speak to me again because I already cut off all his fur. But yeah, so Annie Lamott is who's on my mind today, even more than Robin Williams. And of course he'll be missed. And of course I sympathize for his family and for his friends and those who actually knew him and interacted with him on a daily basis. But his body of work is still there for us. And the good works that he inspired are still there for us. And I guess I feel like the same way I felt when Pete Seeger, who I actually knew, and I mean, I didn't know him well, but I met him a couple of times, and he is the person I followed in. And I'm babbling, so I'm sorry. This is what happens when I don't script things. I forget what I'm talking about because it's late at night and I'm tired. So I have this cultural Catholicism. That's what I was talking about. I'm sorry. I have this cultural Catholicism, but then the religion that I actually grew up with as a teenager is Unitarian Universalism, which a lot of people who grew up in more traditional religions or who are more familiar with more traditionalisms think is a cult. It's not. It's hard to describe if you haven't experienced it. They call themselves, we call ourselves, a non-dogmatic religion. And it's really interesting because instead of having commandments, there are seven principles that guide your life. And the one that always speaks to me most strongly, especially when I see divisiveness within my friends, within my family, is the principle that says every person, every single person, has dignity and worth. Now, I will admit that there are times when it is a challenge to remember this about some people, but I think it's important to remember, and it's the one principle that means most to me. Every person has dignity and worth. You don't have to agree with them, but you have to accord them dignity and worth. Several New Year's days ago, a bunch of my friends and my family were sitting around my kitchen table, and a young man who is still a friend, he's the son of very good friends of mine, said something about how he hated being in high school, and he couldn't deal with normal high school, and therefore he was homeschooled because he was tired of all these stupid kids who were so unenlightened. And another friend, an adult, looked at him and said, "You know what? Just because they don't agree with you doesn't mean they're stupid. Just because they're not as well informed with you as you are now doesn't mean that they someday won't be. And just because they may have different opinions doesn't mean that their opinions are not held as dearly and as strongly and with as much conviction as you hold all of yours. Dignity and worth. I think it's worth remembering." The third faith tradition I have is the one I chose as an adult. And it's the Episcopal religion. And I like it because it has the broad, fairly progressive politics of the Unitarian Universalists that I grew up with. And it has the ritual of the Catholic culture that I also grew up with. And it has really awesome music. The church I'm going to now meets in theater because the actual church building is still in dispute because my diocese in Texas is one that split several years ago, and there's a whole bunch of reasons why, and it's complicated, and it's more than I care to talk about since I'm not an expert nor directly involved. But we meet in theater, which I think is kind of appropriate because really high church is theater. And most of the clergy are women, which is something that's really important to me. And the music alternates between very traditional, Christian hymns and more modern and contemporary things. And sometimes I don't really like the contemporary things because it's just not me. But at the same time, I also appreciate that all the young people, the really young, like the teenagers and the little kids, do love it. My favorite thing about this church is that, just like the Unitarian Church that I went to and still sometimes visit here in Texas, it's multi-generational. Kids are not sent out during the service. They're there for the whole time. They're incorporated into the service. If a baby cries or laughs, you pause and you acknowledge it and you move on. And there are time for these really awesome human moments in the services. And it's those moments of connection that actually I get more out of than the preaching, because I can read and study and make my own decisions about the religion, but the sense of community you can't get from a book. And so one of my favorite moments happened the first time we visited at Christmas, or not Christmas, it was like the first day of Advent. And the priest, Mother Melanie, at the time, was lighting the Advent wreath, and she invited all of the little kids to come up on the stage that we had as the altar and sit on a carpet with her and touch the candles and touch the wreath and talk about what the candles meant and how many there were, and the fact that even though an Advent wreath is really a family ritual and not a church ritual, we also light it in church because we acknowledge that we are part of a global family. It's moments like that that remind me why I'm there. The other moment happens almost every week because this church has chosen to end almost every service with something upbeat. They keep a box of rhythm instruments on the stage. It's like being in kindergarten. There are tambourines and maracas and rhythm sticks and things like that. And they're handed out first to all the really little kids. Then they're handed out to anyone who sits in the front row, which is mostly the really, really old people, some of whom are kind of fragile and they can't climb the stairs to the back of the theater. They can't, you know, march up and down stairs and go around the back during communion. So they sit in the front row. But they get rhythm instruments too because they're sitting in the front row. And it is really, really amazing and fulfilling and so special to hear this music and hear everyone's voices lifted in song and to see little kids and old people together playing these instruments. When I first found the Episcopal Church, one of the first things I found was a list of things from a routine by Robin Williams that he had done at like a convention or something that were why it's great to be Episcopalian. So obviously I'm never going to choose where I worship based on what a celebrity likes, but the fact that someone whose work I admired and whose worldview I also kind of admired had this list that made me go, yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for, was kind of this stamp of approval. So even though I didn't know him, I feel like I have a little bit of a connection because of that. But I feel like we all have that same connection. And what's valid for each of us is our stuff. Your stuff is your stuff. And you don't have to defend it. You just have to respect it and respect it in others.
Steam is drifting into the night. It's cold outside. You're coming off a scary street. Come on inside. Well, I know how it feels, babe, to feel unclean. Most everybody knows.
So this has been Melissa Bartel, the Bathtub Mermaid. Thank you for listening. Stain. Show notes, including music notes, can be found at my website, www.bathtubmermaid.com. This post has been part of the Dog Days of Podcasting, which you can find at dogdaysofpodcasting.com. Thanks for listening. Make sure your bathwater never gets too cold.
Understand. Use my bathtub, yes, you can.